Hello and welcome to a special KABU News and Public Affairs program, Focus on Palestine-Israel. I'm your host, William Seaman. I must begin with a correction. We had originally planned to have the presentation by Mr. Salim Tamari for this broadcast. However, Mr. Tamari's presentation was quite a bit shorter than anticipated, and so we'll be saving that for another occasion. The following presentation, like that of Mr. Tamari, was recorded at a conference of internationals, Palestinians, and Israelis held January 5th through January 7th in the West Bank city of Ramallah. The title of the conference was Ending the Occupation and Siege, The Need for New Coalition. Our speaker is Mr. Jad Isaac, the Director General of the Applied Research Institute of Jerusalem. Mr. Isaac provided the conference with an update on the status of the Israeli occupation, describing the changing character of the occupation in Gaza since the evacuation of the Israeli settlements there, as well as the expansion and consolidation of Israeli settlements in the West Bank, and particularly around Jerusalem. The presentation was accompanied by maps, all of which are available online at the Institute's website. That website is www.arij.org. That's www.arij.org. And now Mr. Jad Isaac of the Applied Research Institute of Jerusalem, speaking in Ramallah on January 5th, 2007.
It's good to see so many faces which I haven't seen for some years. I regret that I'll be the first speaker to setting the scene, which is a very unpleasant scene. I will not do any political analysis. I hope that Salim or Yusuf will do that. I will focus on how the geopolitical conditions on the ground are. The title I chose for this presentation is The Israeli-Palestinian Conflict or From Peace to Pieces. All this is available on our homepage, www.arij.org. Where the Palestinians supported the peace process, believing that at the end of the peace process, we'd end up with a Palestinian state on the West Bank and Gaza, 22% of Mandate Palestine. In the presence of President Clinton, the Palestinian National Charter was ratified, and the Palestinians made the historic reconciliation of accepting this to be the Palestinian state to be. But what happened on the ground is that when we started in 1994 with the Gaza-Jericho agreement, we had 76% of Gaza and Jericho and more than four roads linking the two together. This was followed by the Oslo agreement, which classified the West Bank into areas A, B, and C. Areas A, we have full responsibility. Area B, civil responsibilities. Area C, under Israeli control. Rabin was assassinated after this, and it took us 2 years until 1998 when in Wye River, more additional A were added to the north of the West Bank in Jenin area. And then Netanyahu refused to go any further. According to the agreement, there should have been third and further redeployment, and we had to wait for Barak. And with Barak, we signed the Sharm el-Sheikh agreement, which translated in three stages. And the last stage, which happened in May 2000, gave us 18% Area A, 22% Area B, 60% Area C. That was in 2000. Where are we now in 2006?
Seven.
I'm still living them. I don't want to grow another year older.
No, it might be better.
We are back to square one. We are back to Gaza, Jericho. And you, here, even Ramallah, the capital, you know, was invaded, was raided yesterday. Most of the towns, most of the main cities are raided on a regular basis, and there is no area A, B, and C anymore. And what we should have is that 95% or more of the West Bank, by November 1996, we should have should have been under the PNA responsibility, but we find that after so many years, we are back to the 7% under Palestinian control. Well, meanwhile, yes, 2,000 settlers were removed from Gaza, but the West Bank has been Israelized and Jerusalem has been de-Palestinized. Yes. In the past 4 years, now you tell me 5 years, 25,000 housing units, in other words, more than 100,000 settlers were added to the West Bank in return for the 8,000 settlers who were removed from Gaza. Where are these settlers? 50% of them are in the capital of Palestine, in Jerusalem, in East Jerusalem, and 32% in Bethlehem. These two districts are receiving the most settlement-related activities, and these two areas are suffering from the process of, I call, de-Palestinization. What's happening in Gaza? Gaza now is becoming the largest prison on earth. The blue area here, which represents 17% of Gaza, is a free fire zone. Anything that moves, a car, a donkey, a person, is shot at. There is a sea barrier 950 meters deep inside the Mediterranean, which prevents even fishermen from getting outside to the real fishing zone in the Mediterranean. And the Israeli government is contemplating building a canal, the Philadelphia Canal, which will totally segregate Gaza and convert it into the largest prison on earth. And who opens the Rafah gate? It depends on the security officers, the Israeli officers, while actually there is no Israeli presence between Gaza and Egypt. And geographically, the only border is between Palestinians and the Israelis, yet the passage agreement makes sure that the Israelis have these video camera and they give a final say on whether the Europeans can open the terminal or not. Now I come to the segregation plan, Hafrada plan. This was started originally by Barak in June 2002. Originally, Sharon did not want it. What happened is that it is now 333 kilometers have been finished in the north of the West Bank. 122 are under construction, but we haven't seen the real evil. There are still 337 kilometers which are being planned. I tell you, I think all the court hearings have been finished. So I think we should expect that Israel, following the feasts and the New Year, there will start expanding the building of these, of the planned route. The total length is 702 kilometers. Only 23% of it is on the Green Line. The rest is deep inside the Green Line. And the Israeli government now describes something called the seam zone. The seam zone is the area between the wall or the zone and the Green Line. There are 60 communities in the western segregation zone. 90,000 Palestinians are in this area. And the residents of these areas are not, of course, free to get into Israel, but they are allowed, if they prove ownership, they are allowed to go to their homes. But the rest of the West Bank people cannot go to these seam zones. So these people are living in safaris. 90,000 Palestinians are living in safaris in these areas. Now, the Jordan Valley has been taken, annexed, without a wall or a fence, by very simple decision, which is that only residents of the Jordan Valley area are allowed to move along Route 90. So 52,000 Palestinians are living now in this same zone, which has been de facto annexed to Israel. A very simple order came that says that only on the Palestinian side, there is a buffer zone of 150 to 200 meters where any construction is prohibited. Immediately, we lost 4.4% of the West Bank because of a very small order like this. So, what are the implications of what I'm saying? 10% is the Western segregation zone. 27.5% is the Eastern segregation zone. The 4.4%, which is the area of the buffer zone, it will be inaccessible. And I contemplate there will be a 6.6% of the corridors. So roughly, I'm talking about between 45 to 48% of the West Bank, which Israel wants to annex. In Jerusalem, 45 to 48%. In Jerusalem, its borders have been expanded to include three major settlement blocks, Maale Adumim, the Gush Etzion, plus the Givat Ze'ev. If you add the three together, the population would be about 750,000. Percentage of Palestinians would be about 30% or less. While actually now in East Jerusalem, the population is almost 50-50. Remember, there are about 40,000 Palestinians with Jerusalem IDs who do not have dwellings in East Jerusalem because Israel is not giving them permits, who are forced to live outside the municipal boundaries in Ram, in other places. In the meeting last week, there was talk about reducing the number of checkpoints. We have 518 barriers, checkpoints, earth mounds, gates, etc., etc. The talk is to reduce 27 earth mounds. So please don't raise your expectations. Earth mounds will not make our life better. Here is an example of Anata. If you look at the black border, this is the border of the village boundary of Anata, and see what happens to Anata. Anata people now are living in a ghetto, surrounded by a wall from all directions with only one entrance. The majority of the land of Anata has been confiscated. Ram is becoming another ghetto, and even in Beit Hanina, look, Beit Hanina al-Balad, the old town, is separated from the Beit Hanina. And you have to go through checkpoints and corridors in order to get, if you are visiting your brother or son. Well, how I see the future? Unfortunately, I see it through a glass darkly. Mr. Bush, in the letter to Sharon in 2004, sent this, if in light of the realities on the ground, it's unlikely that, you know, we have to take things into consideration. This was in response to Sharon asking that the United States will allow Israel to retain six settlement blocks. Well, I can tell you, Mr. Bush can give the Israelis Washington, New York, Seattle, but he has no right to give them 1 inch of our land. So this Bush declaration is something which I think is worse than the Balfour Declaration, and we cannot. There will be no viable Palestinian state if this will be allowed to go. For the Israelis, they want to keep the Israelis, I mean those in power. Green is the area A and B combined together. This will be the Palestinian state. You can call it anything, the Empire of Palestine, or I call it the Union of Palestinian Ghettos, UPG. But for the Israelis, this is Judea and Samaria. It's an integral part of Israel. The road systems are linked together, and that's how they will be in the future. So if you try to put the two together, you will see that there are two states living side by side, but unfortunately, one is inside the other. Palestinian state will not have any border access. It will be under the control, whether it's air, land, or sea, control of the occupation. It will not be occupation per se, But I think it is exactly a similar but a different kind of occupation, which cannot be accepted. So to take you back to how I see the coming few years, I summarize very quickly. Areas A and B combined together, the segregation plan, east and west, how I see the corridors, and here I put five corridors. They might be reduced by one or two. Then the settlements, and there will be two types of roads. One road which is only for the Israelis, the blue one, and the Palestinians will have their own roads. And when the two roads will come close to each other, there will be 23 tunnels that will be built so that there will be two in one, two states in one. And of course, there will be 25 terminals that link between Israel and the Palestinian territory. Based on that, I think that any attempts to revive the whole peace process through negotiations, like what used to do on an interim agreement, we will spend the next 20, perhaps 200 years negotiating corners here, small areas here. And I try to put the scenarios. One scenario will get about 54% of the West Bank, but there will be 7,000 settlers need to be removed. Things could be better here if only one corridor in Hebron is made, or one corridor in the north is made. And the final thing that considering the kind of negotiations that used to be done, the best thing that we can hope for would be to get about 60% of the West Bank. That includes even the East Jerusalem areas will be under the Palestinian control. I don't think this is going to be a viable Palestinian state. I don't think any Palestinian leader, regardless of who is in power, will ever accept such a scenario. And the settlers, by the way, believe this is too dangerous. They have their plan, and they put it, they would like to offer us, 30 to 35% of the West Bank. I think this will reduce the Palestinian state to something like 7 to 12% of the total mandate Palestine, and this is not the guiding principles of the Madrid Peace Conference and why we supported the peace process in the beginning. What went wrong? Very quickly. And by the way, the maps that I showed you do not differ too much from all the Israeli-made maps, whether it's Dropless Plan, Alon Plan, Sharon Plan, Barak Plan. They have the same thing in common. There was not one single Israeli leader who was in power who said that I am willing to go back to the 1967. So, we have to put things straight. They never accepted even the preamble of 242, which says non-admissibility of acquiring people's land by war. The lessons that we did not learn, first of all, is that only free men can negotiate. The fatal mistake that our leadership took is that they moved here, building that with time confidence will be built. But instead of the confidence, president, prime minister, or minister needs a permit from the Israelis to go to his office. So only free men can negotiate, and this is should be remembered. There was no definition of the end game that in so much time this is what we will get. The end game came even in the roadmap. There, in the whole Oslo agreement, there was no mention of the Palestinian state. No holy dates. Israel was allowed to change the dates according to a letter which was sent by Warren Christopher saying it's up to Israel to decide the scope and extent of further withdrawals. So all the preambles in the agreement which said that final status should have started in May 96 and finished by May 1999 is no longer valid. Of course, Israel was allowed to continue the expansion of its settlements and bypass roads, although there was a phrase in the agreement which said neither side shall take any steps that will jeopardize the outcome of final states negotiations. There's a weak UN and international community. We have to recognize this. We also, you should recognize that there was no arbitration mechanism, and it has to be settled between the two, the Israelis and the Palestinians. And there was no honest broker, because the United States was not an impartial arbitrator, but rather, I think, it was an accomplice in this process. Another factor is that the Palestinians did not feel the dividends of peace. The GDP went down, unemployment increased, poverty increased. There was an absence of symmetry between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and of course, violence has added to the shift between the two societies. So, I believe that any attempts now to link the Israeli disengagement plans with the roadmap or with the peace process is futile. It's only going to add more agony. Extended interim agreement is not good. We cannot now wait for another 20 years to continue negotiation. We should start from the beginning, from the end. This is the end, and let's reach it in 6 months. I think this is the Egyptian, Italian, Spanish, French initiative. The international community has a responsibility to stop Israel's continued defiance. And this is the strength of such a gathering. Perhaps we are not in key governmental positions. We have a responsibility to inform what we saw here. Why is it not available on news? Why CNN or BBC or ABC will never show maps? Why, when Carter showed one map of what was proposed in Camp David, all hell broke down? And he had to... I think it's still there. The fight is not finished. I think Israelis should now be cured. So we should find a cure for Israelis, because they have been addicted to our occupation. It's about time now that we try to help them. High-tech management is not good to solve the problem. All these X-ray machines on border crossings that you see are not going to solve the problem. And by the way, these are paid by Palestinians from the American budget to the PA. So it's not Israeli investment. What is needed is a very strong third-party intervention, and or, I think, a trusteeship, a UN, that the whole area occupied in 67 be put under such a trusteeship, and its fate decided until we resolve our conflict. But we cannot be vulnerable to the generosity of Israelis. When will they open checkpoint X, and when will they remove Earth Mound Y? I tell you that the clock is ticking. Miserable conditions, resource shortages are the best niches for the rise in fundamentalism and for voluntary transfer. The clock is ticking, and unless action is made immediately, I think instability is going to spread throughout the region. I believe that we, such a group, has a very important role to play, to educate, to inform. Because much of this information that I have shown, and I'm sure if you know very well, you know it, but much of this, it's not available to the layman. And the layman, we should trust that people who will see it believe that it's very clear, black and white. And we cannot continue just discussing the superficial issues about the Israeli-Palestinian relation, internal Palestinian relation, government or not government. Palestinians made their choice. Their choice should be respected. Whether we voted for... Why no one in the world said, we object to the fact that Lieberman is now a minister? But the world is allowed to say, well, you voted for Hamas, you will be punished. Collectively, the whole Palestinian population should be collectively punished. I think it's about time to speak out and to stop the double standards. Otherwise, the Israeli and the Palestinian peace activists will be the first victims of the continued conflict. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Mr. Jad Isaac, providing an overview of the current state of the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza. Mr. Isaac is the Director General of the Applied Research Institute of Jerusalem. For more information and for the maps referred to in this presentation, please visit their website at www.arij.org. Once again, as mentioned at the beginning of this program, we had originally planned on broadcasting the presentation by Mr. Salim Tamari, but that will be rescheduled for another time. You have been listening to a KABU News and Public Affairs program, Focus on Palestine-Israel. I've been your host, William Seaman. Thank you for listening.